Hinduism today also provides Hindu leaders an opportunity to express their opinion on what they consider contemporary issues through its publisher's desk, minister's message, and my turn columns. In a recent publisher's desk, I wrote on the topic, I want to see God, some pertinent suggestions to sincere seekers on where and how to look for divinity. The reason I chose this topic was to emphasize that one of the greatnesses of Hinduism is that it is experientially oriented rather than belief oriented. In other words, the goal is not to simply believe in God, but rather to eventually experience God. The idea for this article came from a visit to the home of a wealthy Hindu family of doctors in the suburbs of Chicago, Illinois. The son, who had been raised in the U.S., asked the question, aren't all religions pretty much the same? Does it really make a difference which religion you practice? I answered the question in a simple way at the time, but kept thinking about it afterwards and developed an analogy that goes like this. So, of course, it's a medical analogy designed for doctors. So the question is, aren't all medical clinics pretty much the same? Okay? Just like religions. Only if you have a simple illness. If you have a complex problem and need the more sophisticated medical equipment and specialists, then they are definitely not. This is based upon what happened to one of our soapies, by the way. He ended up in Honolulu to check out a heart pain, and it was amazing what happened. For example, someone is suffering from chest pains and goes to his family doctor who lives nearby. The doctor is not sure what the problem is and suggests he goes to the hospital to have certain tests taken. He does so, and the hospital, after taking the test, is still not sure of the problem and refers him to a cardiologist living in a large city nearby for even more tests. Sound familiar? Clearly, all clinics are not the same. Religion is similar to this. If all you want is to live a virtuous life, religions are all very similar at that basic level of practice. But if you have an interest in personally experiencing God, then only a few religions have within them the practices that lead to that experience. A good example of this fact has been occurring in Catholic monasteries for decades. Some of the monks in these monasteries have the desire to personally experience God. What do they do to pursue this? They turn to Hindu scriptures, such as Patanjali's yoga aphorisms, to provide them proper guidelines for deep meditation, as there are no teachings regarding this in Christianity. So this is a common fact. We've met many Christian monks over the years who are deep in the study of Patanjali. Returning to the publisher's desk, I wrote, it begins with a classic story of how Swami Vivekananda, when he was still a college student in Calcutta, went around to the religious leaders in the Calcutta area and asked them all if they had seen God. None of them gave a satisfactory answer to this question until he met Sri Ramakrishna. The answer that Sri Ramakrishna gave was, yes, I see him as clearly as one sees an apple in the palm of the hand, nay, even more intently. And not only this, you can also see him. Pretty good answer, right? This answer deeply impressed the young Vivekananda, who soon after accepted Sri Ramakrishna as his guru. Thank you. In Chennai, it was translated into Tamil, so I had pauses along the way. That's why I'm pausing. Though many individuals are inspired by the thought of seeing God, it seems very distant and unattainable. This is because we think of jumping somehow from a 0% consciousness of God's presence to 100% awareness of God's presence. This is where our concept of enlightenment may be a barrier. That enlightenment is an instantaneous event, coming out of nowhere, totally transforming us like a flash of lightning. It is more helpful to think of enlightenment as a gradual process which involves increasing our control over our instinctive nature, controlling our thoughts better, and experiencing more and more of our innate divinity. To experience God, do we sit on a mountaintop, go into a cave, or simply close our eyes? Where do we go to see God? Perhaps the easiest place to start is to see God in great religious teachers. We feel a spiritual aura about them that is different. We see a light in their eyes we do not see in others. The mere sound of their words encourages us to live a more spiritual life. I had an interesting experience in this regard. One of the things you have to be careful about in India is if you think something, it's liable to happen. India is very unusual that way. For example, before I give the real example, I'll tell another example. We were in Madurai, this nice hotel, Taj Garden Retreat Hotel. So, you know, the monks are used to having fruit and yogurt for breakfast, so I was having my fruit and yogurt for breakfast and skipping all the great stuff like the big dosais and all the other things. You know. So it was the last day, and I thought, well, I'll splurge. You know, I think this morning I'll have a dosai. Why not? You know, it's just the last day. Break my traditional meal. And so, you know, I thought that, and then one of the ladies all of a sudden, you know, brings over a dosai and says, here's a dosai for you. I said, thank you. You know. And then another lady comes over, you know, doesn't realize I've had one, and says, would you like a dosa? I mean, that happened no other morning, right? It's not like every morning someone would bring food to me. And that one morning, I had the thought, and there before I know it, you know, I had my dosa. So. The example here is, you know, this talk was given one night, you know, you see God and religious teachers, and then we went to this temple, the Arupadai Virudhi temple, the next day in Chennai. And if you read the description, you know, we said we managed to do the Arupadai Virudhi three times in one morning, because all six temples are in, it's right near the beach. It's in Kalakshetra there. It's finished now, and all the shrines are finished. And so we went around all six shrines three times. Most of the inner searchers carrying milk in a pot, which is traditional Thaipusam activity. So they were going around, and the monks were tending an abhishekam somewhere else, and different things were happening, and then there were other activities. It was multi-activity morning, and I forget exactly where we were, but this man came up, you know, and just went on and on. He said, oh, I see God in you, you know, you're so radiant, I see God in you. I have to stay and talk in the corner. Oh, here it was, I created it, you know, the next day. So we have to be very careful what you think in India, it's liable to happen. Another way to see God, which is a little more difficult, but still easy to do, is to look deeply into the eyes of another person. So we've done this one so many times, I won't read it. But of course, the challenge is to get past the personality. Because, you know, maybe we don't like the person. Or we're mad at the person because they did this, you know, and they did this. So we see the personality. We see the part of them we're mad at. That's what we don't like. And we don't go in deeply enough. But of course, that's the challenge, is to get past the personality and see the soul in everyone. Regardless of if we like them or not, we should be able to see the soul in them. Then it goes on in the temple. I won't read all this. But you know, we talked about seeing God in the temple through the image. And on the inner search, you know, some of the inner searchers had some very nice experiences at the temple where the deity moved and smiled and came to life from different things. And one of the nicest ones was in Pillayarpati, which is the Ganesha with two arms, the big Ganesha with two arms, which is near Madurai, more precisely near Kundarkudi and Karakudi, which is near, which is where all the Silpis come from. And then it's slightly south of what's called Chetty Nad, which is the Chettiar stronghold in the south. So it's a nicely run temple. It's been there for 1500 years, doing its daily pujas. That's quite a long time, very impressive. So the Ganesha is just huge, really, and you have a nice view of it. And so the puja was particularly nice. Everyone was up close, and they also had about 10 or 15 priests, because there's a priest training school, a Patasala there, and so the older members of the Patasala get to chant during the puja. and help during the puja as part of the training. So there's more priests than usual, 10 to 15, chanting. Like they would chant Sri Rudram, and it was half the group would chant one line, and the other half would chant the next line. And the first half would hold the last syllable for a little bit, so there'd be an overlap of that last syllable of one line with the first couple of words of the next line. It's going back and forth like that. Really nice, very precise chanting. Long abhishekam with lots of substances poured. And, I mean, it's a huge ganesha, so to cover it with milk or yogurt or vibhuti takes a lot. So anyway, they were going on. A number of the inner searchers really had a nice experience there. Felt Ganesha's presence more than they had their whole life. So it was really nice and fulfills the idea of experiencing God through the image in the temple quite nicely. Next one, of course, is meditation. Way of experiencing God. And then I'll read the end here, since this is not something we always say. The key to deepening our experience of God is the regular practice of spiritual disciplines. And it is fair to say that no other religion contains such a vast range of spiritual practices, from such fundamental virtues as non-injury and purity to temple worship, advanced yoga practices, and meditation. I was recently asked a question by a New York radio show on Hinduism, as well as by Hindu pilgrims to our Hawaii monastery. The question is that we are all so very busy with the demands of modern life, there is little time left for spiritual practices. What do you consider the most important practices to be followed? It's a good question, right? So I thought about it. For the radio show, I thought about it ahead of time, and this was my answer. The answer I gave was to do two things. Establish a shrine in the home and worship there every morning. Then secondly, go to the temple once a week. For the morning worship, the exact routine to follow depends on the religious background of the family, but typical practices include a simple arati or longer puja, singing devotional songs, repeating a mantra, reading scripture, and meditation. So those are the two important things, and it's surprising how many people don't do a morning worship, even though they're very sincere and, you know, wanting to advance spiritually and so forth. They haven't committed to doing a worship every morning. So, of course, that's the most important sadhana. You know, it's like, it can be compared to physical exercise. You know, to benefit from physical exercise, we're supposed to exercise half an hour a day for at least five days a week. Guidelines I was reading, elevate the heart through fast walking or running or bicycling or whatever, swimming, five times a week, half an hour. So if you do it once a week and then twice a week and then you skip it and so forth, of course you don't get the benefits. So that's something that everyone understands, physical body. So spiritual is harder to see, but it works the same way. You know, if we do our morning disciplines, which we're supposed to do every day except our weekend, whenever that falls. We get to take it a little bit easy on the weekend, but if every work day, every school day, we do our morning devotionals, then our spiritual life does move forward. Though we may not see it, it does move forward, it does benefit. But if we're erratic, then we probably don't make much progress. Well, that's one of the nice things Gurdjieff stressed that so strongly. Created a nice habit of all of the older members of doing that. Half an hour vigil looks so short compared to what we used to do, right? Used to be longer. In the monastery, of course, it's easy. Everyone gets up. If you don't get up, you don't get to do your normal kulam work. So everyone's really motivated in the monastery. Everyone likes to do, quote, their work. Anyway, nice to be back. So we had a great trip. Uh, 90 people, as you can imagine, is a large group, three buses worth in India. Every time we got on the bus, that would take about half an hour. Let's get everybody into the bus, half an hour. Out of the bus was easier, but in took longer. So it was a major accomplishment moving to India, and fortunately the program was nicely planned and beautifully executed, and because of that it was quite successful. We had lots of help, both beforehand and during. For example, Nelly Alpan helped set things up. Sheila and Narayan Venkatakrishnan were very helpful in setting other events up, including their family, helped set things up. And so between them and others, all the special activities happened quite nicely. Because even to coordinate a big Abhishekam takes hours of someone's work to get all the materials together, get them to the temple, and so forth. You know, the biggest one we had was, of course, at Brihadishvara, because the size of that lingam is huge, right? So you can imagine how much milk and everything was needed. I don't know quite where it was all acquired, but anyway, you know, they're up on a scaffold. It looks more like a construction project than a temple, but you know, priests are up on a scaffold guarding. And for a long time, so that was quite beautiful. And then when they opened it, the decoration was so beautiful. I mean, there was such the flowers covered the whole base and half of the lingam. These beautiful three colors of flowers. I forget what colors they were. Green, red, and yellow maybe. So they had alternating rows of green, red, and yellow flowers. And this huge lingam base halfway around, and a few other garlands that were different colors going the other way. Really beautiful. That was also a nice experience because everyone could see the lingam so big and the opening, the temple so big. Whereas at some of the temples, unfortunately, they could only spend a few seconds in front of the deity. You go through these long queues, can't really stay. Not enough room for 90 people to get close, so. But the temples where we had longer experiences of the deity were definitely superior to the ones rushing by in a few seconds. So, those were very nice. Okay, well again, nice to be back.